Great podcast lined up. David Eicholt returns. A lot of good feedback on the weekly series we did with him during the season. Going to try and make it a monthly thing in the offseason, and this is the first installment. We catch up on the five transfer portal grabs for the Iowa Hawkeye football team. David's thoughts on those transfers, including a lot of basketball talk here. Caitlin Clark, jersey retirement, recruiting, tons of stuff. Let's have a day. Let's go. Wednesday morning, January 29th. First time. Welcome back to the new year. We have David back on the podcast. Long January for you?
Yeah, it's been pretty long. But you know, life's good, man. I did not get the reset I was kind of hoping to get. Obviously with everything going on, but I got plenty of time in the future to do it. So we'll keep with it. I was hoping to go on vacation and like drop off the face of the earth for a couple days. But
where's the like number one vacation spot for David Eicholt?
On a beach.
Mexico?
On a beach somewhere. Yeah. I usually go to Grand Cayman Islands. Been going down there for like 20 plus years. I was hoping to get to Florida, like on the beach, but you know, I might want to stick in Iowa just based on the weather that's been down there lately.
Dude, my nose is peeling. I was in Florida this weekend.
Oh yeah?
I was in Miami, but it was cold. It was cold. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. The SEC is so upset the fact that they haven't won titles in 2 years that they're converting to Midwest weather to try to regain some of their mojo.
It's tough down there in the SEC. just means more up here.
Just built different. I'll tell you what, though. Love to see Rodrigo Blankenship try to kick in that weather. Because I can tell you, Keith Duncan wouldn't hit it.
You want to put me on a soapbox and just turn this into a different podcast? We'll just go right into that. I mean, the guy missed. There's some serious problem with choosing all Americans and or like the Groza Award specifically that year was chosen. I think before. The conference
before he clanked the two in the SEC championship,
indoors in the biggest game of the year. Meanwhile, Keith Duncan is just banging them through off of like bad grass in 37 degrees. Like, oh my god! And even in complete vacuum outside of that, take the weather away, I'm pretty sure Keith still had like nearly the exact same percentage he did. So it was
nuts.
No, we're glad to have you back here on the walk-ons.
The routine's been different not being here, man. It's been weird. Not gonna lie.
I know. Well, we just, you know, not that you're not important, but there are other guests that we want to bring on in the offseason. Right?
I think Jay Hagan and Luke Lachey have a, you know, I think they got the one up on me.
Decent start for the walk-ons in the offseason. Like when Jay and Luke both responded, I was like, oh man, it's gonna be a good year.
Starting on a high note.
Well-received podcast. Even Luke Elkin was on Monday.
And, that's right.
Somebody was like, man, I know it was a nerdy long snapper podcast, but this is like top three for me. It's very cool to hear about an 18-year-old being thrust in there like 3 weeks onto campus. Most people didn't even know that. We're happy to have you back. We're going to talk about a couple things today. Might even talk a little basketball. You're full swing basketball right now.
Things are that's why I didn't get the break. I think kind of given everything with the women's team and obviously the men's team, and that's we could probably do a whole podcast on what's going on with the men's team right now. But
I know nothing about basketball in the sense that like I can stand here and talk to the people and give them valuable information. I am on the same level of them as just like speculation, and I see scores and them, you know, put out certain performances against teams. So I am a pure observer of basketball. And it is where I wanted to start today, not just because this week, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, your big podcast came out with Caitlin. Congratulations on that. Not that like that's some for you personally, you're like, yeah, I can do a podcast with Kate. Like you have that relationship with her, covered her for 4 years, all this stuff. But that is a huge deal. Like she's not just giving podcast interviews to anybody.
I had somebody bring that up to me, like, because people are making full YouTube reactions to the podcast, like,
oh yeah,
like People Magazine picked it up. Like, this went way bigger than I thought it was going to be, dude.
So, I'd love your opinion on this. She has continued to elevate into this icon outside of even sports at this point. I actually think if you're going to have the argument of like most influential athlete to ever wear a Hawkeye uniform, like it was at one point her and Niall Kinnick, and I think she's. And it's not fair because social media wasn't a thing in 1930.
That's the big thing for me.
If Niall Kinnick was around today, like how big is he, right?
Yeah.
And if he doesn't pass away, like tragically, and his life continues on and gets into government like he was going to, like people were saying he had a great chance to be the freaking president of the United States. Now that's another level. Never got to do that. But like he did what he did. His legacy is what it is. I think Caitlin is on an entirely new level, untouched by anybody.
I'll tell you this, because it's funny you brought that up, because I was talking about with some of my media colleagues last night at the women's game when I was covering the win over Northwestern. I think there's a legitimate argument to say that Caitlin Clark is one of the 50 most famous people in the world right now.
Oh,
because here's why. And somebody related it to Michael Jordan, the fact that people who didn't even like basketball knew who Michael Jordan was. They pay attention to Michael Jordan. There's a significant portion of Caitlin's fan base now, I feel like, that don't like basketball.
Yeah, they don't even watch basketball.
A cultural icon. Like, when you transcend what made you famous and you just become this brand, that's when you know you've really made it. Like, I mean, shit, Tyler. She's sitting in a box with Taylor Swift at a Chiefs playoff game, and like, now they're best friends.
I was going to say now, like in the Swifties, you get on their good side. Like, you know, you just gained.
Very happy they do not know my real opinion on Taylor Swift. Let's put it that way.
you gained their favor. Like you just gained millions of followers / like semi fans.
Yeah.
Who don't care about the basketball, but she sat with Taylor in a box.
Kelsey,
Taylor seemed
point example. Yeah,
Taylor seemed to be happy that they're friends. So she's good with the Swifties. So now Caitlin has, you know, 40 million Swifties that are her fan. Like she's, top 50 in the world. Certainly like the top 50 trending in the world.
Easily. It's tough because politicians and like obviously musicians, like Taylor Swift is arguably the most famous person in the world. When that's insane to say, probably alongside, you know, probably other world leaders and stuff, but it's crazy to think this girl from Des Moines, Iowa, who is hyping up her dog, and that was a cardboard cutout in Carver Hawkeye Arena, is now this larger-than-life figure. But no, it was interesting, too, because I had a couple of people bring up on the podcast, and I didn't even think twice about it, but they were saying, you know, Caitlin hasn't done any actual media in, like, since the Kelsey podcast, and before that, she hadn't done any in, like, a few weeks before that. So I was like, oh, yeah, I kind of got a shout, Caitlin. That's all I can really say.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Shout out, Caitlin. Like,
I mean, I reached out. I sent her a DM on Twitter, and I was like, "Yeah, I know that this isn't going to happen, and this should have been done like 3 years ago." If you ever want to come on the podcast, we'd love to have you for like 20 minutes, even. Like, our fans would love to hear from you, but I understand you've elevated yourself. Jersey retirement is 4 days from today. That's Sunday.
Yeah, it's gonna be Sunday at 12:30, and it's gonna be insane.
Yeah,
like I think it's gonna be a top three atmosphere that's ever been in Carver.
And that is for the USC game, which
Juju is Juju Watkins coming to town.
Yeah, they're fourth in the country or something like that right now.
Yeah, and their second best player just got cleared off injury. So I mean, they're low.
Great.
Like it's. Great. They're loaded, and everybody kind of knows that. And I think Juju Watkins is going to come in and be extremely competitive. Like, she's going to want to come into Carver and drop 40.
Which is such a sick, like, if you're a competitor, you go into somebody else's jersey retirement, like, ceremony, and, you know, they're catching the Hawks at a decent time, a decent year. Like, this has turned into, it may be unfair for me to say it. You could reclassify it if you want. I would call a rebuilding year for Iowa.
And Jan said it herself too. I mean, before the season, because she knew the expectations were going to be just extremely unrealistic, considering that the fact that they just made two national championship games.
Yeah. You know, I think you were hoping probably as a fan that you could just reload. Just really, it's just when you have a nuclear bomb, you can't just reload a nuke, right? And
yeah,
so like we're working with great weapons still. Not to get militaristic here, but they're not Caitlin. They're not Caitlin. They're not Kate Martin, who's doing her own thing, balling in on Unrivaled, and like she's got her own.
Yeah,
like she's got her own lore that's like attached to Caitlin and the rise of Iowa. Like it's crazy just the cultural impact that this.
So I'll tell you this, because I'm previewing it for this week too, and I know we've got a lot of football and stuff to talk about, but this is important. I will say this: this is the most important recruiting weekend in the history of Iowa women's basketball, and it's the biggest because you have I don't know how much you've really dove into this with everything you're doing. They have seven visitors on campus, including five-star Addison Deal, who's obviously signed. They have the number one overall recruit in 2026 taking an official visit, who is extremely close with Addison Deal. And I do
Is that the Wilixo girl?
She is. Her name's Kate Harpring. She's from Atlanta. She's a 5'11 guard that's averaging 36 points a game in the highest division in Georgia.
36 a game.
Iowa has a realistic shot at landing her. And her, like I said, her and Addison Deal are very close.
And Addison Deal's like the 12th rated player, isn't she?
She's ninth by us, but she's a consensus 5-star. Jeez. Like she's legit. And then they're also bringing in, I think, another 2 or 3 different 5-stars. I'll tell you this, if they land Kate Harpring alongside Addison Deal with his freshman class, Iowa's going back to a Final Four.
Yeah. Well, because that's the thing is, and I hope that Iowa fans see this. I don't think the hype is going to, you know, it's a tough year. They're battling, as I understand it right now. I think I saw something, maybe even you retweeted it, where they're like last four in right now this year.
Yeah, they needed to win last night, but you got to keep in mind, three of their losses have come down the final possession, and every single loss they've been within a possession in the fourth quarter. Like, Iowa's not getting blown out by any means.
Yeah.
And I think that's encouraging for a lot of the younger players, but they know they're right there. And you know, ultimately, I think people overestimate recruiting. When they go to a visit somewhere, it's not all about the wins and losses. I think a good win really can help elevate the visit. But they're looking at fan base, looking at NIL now. They're looking at resources, looking at the coaching staff. They're looking at the weapons around them. Because if Iowa, you know, people go visit Iowa, right? And Iowa gets beat by 10, 15 points. If Iowa stays competitive with USC, that's a big win. Because every female basketball player knows, like, that's a top 5 Final Four caliber team.
Yeah.
If I'm the Iowa coaching staff, they say, okay, look how great our freshman class is. We're losing these couple people, but look how good they're going to be. Insert you into that and look where you guys can go.
And that's what you have to try and translate to these young girls in high school. Like, and it almost is I would never advocate to be like where the Iowa basketball team is right now, record wise, and like where they sit in the, like where they'll be in the tournament and stuff. But as a product of that, when a team is down, there is a certain extent to a recruit, and I know these 5-star recruits, and whether it's a girl or a boy or a basketball player or a football player, these 5-stars have this mentality, and it's part of why they are who they are.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm him or I'm her, and I can go in and change it. Like, that's who I am. I'm that good. And so with a little bit of struggle this year, they can see that opportunity. They're like, oh, Iowa is lacking something, and that something could be me. And like,
that's why they got Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark said she wanted to take him back to a Final Four. She didn't want to go to a perennial blue blood.
Exactly. And then you get, you know, if you get Addie Deal and this other girl from Georgia, and you insert them with Stremlo and Guyton is unbelievable. Guyton has been so impressive. I think maybe the most impressive.
Yeah. She's Tegan, different.
Tegan Mullaney, Ava High. I mean, these girls can play.
Yeah, they're hoopers.
And Jan is playing them. there was at one point, like, she runs this like all freshman lineup that's like she just lets them go.
It gave them the spark last night. They had one senior in there alongside three freshmen and a sophomore, and they made that run that first quarter, and that kind of separated them, kind of gave them at least the wiggle room, because Iowa was down 8 early last night.
Yeah.
But Aaliyah Guyton, again, so I believe her mom is a former Brazilian national team player, basketball player. Her dad's AJ Guyton, who's the third leading scorer in Indiana basketball history. Like, yeah, she knows the game. And on top of that, the thing that really impresses me the most, Tyler, is a week ago we talked to Jan and we'd ask her, you know, who's speaking up in the huddle. We didn't even get the question out about who the leader is, and she said Aaliyah Guyton. You have a freshman who wasn't fully cleared until November 26th because she tore her ACL her senior year of high school. So she didn't get to do fall, like, any practice with them whatsoever. Wasn't fully cleared till the season actually started. And then you go in there on a team that has seniors who have been to 2 Final Fours and have won 3 Big Ten tournament titles, and you say, hey, yeah, this freshman's one of the biggest leaders on the team. Like, that's got to be so encouraging. And I know people are thinking about, oh, that's bad for the short term. Don't think that way at all, because no. Jan knows this. Jan is so smart. And this is what I try to convey to people. They know it's a short term struggle right now. Tyler, they're coming.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to be really damn good for the next several, like, the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I know. It's so sick. I think people just have to get through this year, and then it's going to be like, yeah, another, like what we've had with Caitlin is going to be back as far as what it will satisfy that urge of like being a top team again. I think immediately next year, like another year for all, like a year of development for all 4 of these freshmen that are insane. Like, you add a couple 5 stars to that potentially, and it could be dangerous. I watched Guyton play, and it was so fun to watch her be so aggressive, like against, like, and she's not big, and she's so aggressive, and she can handle it, and she finishes at the rim. Like, it's incredible. So to hear that she's got the vocal leadership already, it's dangerous. It's dangerous. It's fun. Let me see. We got into the basketball team there. Oh, yeah. And then the pod with Caitlin. I just think it's cool. It's cool for you to get that pod because you cover these players and you have a unique relationship with them. And then that relationship turns into you being able to land that podcast 4 years later. Right. I just think about like you approaching that with players now, like, cause you're doing that every year as a reporter on the team. Like, I mean, that's the biggest thing for you is access and the insider info and all that stuff. And I think it's a testament to you. And I think it's sick. I don't know. I think landing that is so cool.
Here's my thing to kind of sum it up again. I really encourage people to go watch it. I had a blast with it, but like the best response I've seen is exactly what I'm going for, is a lot of the top comments were just saying, it's so clear how much you guys trust each other. And yeah, for Caitlin to like go into like an interview like that and just not be guarded, especially with a journalist, because it's different if she goes on with like the Kelseys, right? Right. Because those are professional athletes, retired athletes. Like, they know, it's a different sort of vibe. But to go and do a podcast with a journalist and just be completely free flowing, it's different.
It's an interesting dynamic for like those. I mean, she's A-list superstar. Like, who they have to actually manage and be careful of who they are ever around or who they talk to.
No, for sure.
Who they give access to. And so it was cool. Let's flip over to the men's basketball team. And I'll be honest. I don't watch. I've watched a little bit of the girls' games if they're on. If they're on TV and I happen to catch it. I haven't watched a single second of men's Iowa basketball. And this isn't because of how they're doing. It's because of – it's just me. Even when we had Garza, didn't watch any. I didn't watch basketball. When we had Keegan Murray, I didn't watch Iowa basketball. It's a me thing, not a basketball fan, is what it is.
Probably important context just considering how everything is going right now, honestly.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like that's where I'm coming from. It seems like – because I still see all the Twitter updates and the clips and all that stuff. That's how I get my news. Like, I know the Iowa team won or lost because I see the tweets about it.
And everybody freaked out. Yep.
Yeah. It seems as though, you know, we're losing a lot of games. We're getting blown out here, blown out there. But then, like, kind of randomly, we have, like, these individual performances or these individual guys who are like, man, these guys can really play some basketball. Like, they are ballers. Like, can I get just a gist of this year's Iowa men's basketball in a nutshell? Like what's going on?
I think there's a real danger of them not making the Big Ten tournament.
Which is the last three teams, right? They take 15
last three 18. Teams. Yeah, I'm very surprised by this year's team because I didn't expect them to be great by any means, but I thought they'd be an NCAA caliber tournament team. I still think talent-wise they are. I think there's a lot of things that have gone against them. I think certain development of certain players hasn't really taken place or like where they thought it would be at this point. I think Iowa defensively is just falling short on every single metric. And when Owen Freeman goes out of the game, Tyler, opponents are shooting 70% at the rim. I mean, yeah, you're not going to win games like that.
I see this thing like, man, it's really old to have every team have a career shooting night against us. Like it's always against us. And at some point you're like, man, this is a lot of luck or it might just be an us problem.
After the USC game, I said people need to realize the Wisconsin game when they gave up 21 threes to 116, like that's a career night. Iowa's defense was not good, but at some point, like people still have to miss. Like,
right.
Wisconsin right. just wasn't missing whatsoever. Sure. But when it translates to USC, when it translates to UCLA, not Ohio State really wasn't a career night, but in the last four road games, Tyler. This is part of my column yesterday. In the last four road games, Iowa has trailed by at least 19 points at one point.
It's not good.
It's a scary trend. And guess what? And not to be the bearer of bad news or rain fire upon anybody, because I think I know where this fan base sits right now. The schedule is not getting easier. Like,
no,
I honestly, Tyler, I'm trying to think if I should phrase this.
Let me go yeah. and then you can think. Okay. And I can speak so candidly here because I'm unbiased and totally emotionally detached, which I feel I do a pretty good job of on the football side, being someone who played. But there is still always that bias. I've never denied that bias. But for basketball,
yep.
I don't give a shit. I mean, I'd love the Hawks to win, but I just have zero attachment to it. From what I see, fans are basically like the apathy is all time high. Nobody shows up to the games. Like all I see is the empty pics of Carver. It's clearly not an issue. That fans want to come and watch basketball in that arena for this Iowa program, because then when the girls games happen, it's sold out and people are all over the place. Right. And you're going to see that Sunday. So it's a team thing, or a staff thing or a player thing. And it looks like, and there was some, again, outsider perspective, very fringe. From what I saw last year, you know, you have Pat and Connor move on from the program. The youngest kid comes out and says, I'm not going to Iowa. I want to kind of do my own thing. Like, Fran's at the end of his career. Like, is the end of Fran's career, like, is this it? From an outside perspective, it seems
I think there's an above zero chance, and I lean more toward the yes than no at this point. And that's just more of a gut feel. I really haven't dove too much into the weeds about this. I'm just sort of reading the tea leaves and piecing things together at this point, because I also still have a problem with it being January 29th and saying change needs to happen immediately. And it's kind of ironic because I know how people felt about the Brian Ferentz, my opinion about the Brian Ferentz situation and this situation. I think there are two different departments, because one was a coordinator or assistant, one's the head coach. So there's levels to this, in my opinion.
Sure. Well, from my perspective, it seems like a thing where I'm not even saying that their performance or because France did a lot of good things. He's taken him to a lot of tournaments, right? Has the whole Sweet 16 thing monkey on his back, but he's done a lot of good things. He's done a lot of great players that produced in the Iowa basketball program. Yep. I don't think that. I mean, and this is bias. This is just who I am. Football, sure. Basketball, ski. Like when it comes to coaching, I am always going to think that coaches deserve more time than most people do. I'm not even saying Fran should be fired or they should try to get him out of there. I'm just viewing it as like maybe this is what Fran wants. Like Like, I think Fran might.
Yeah, that's where I was going to start trending too, because keep in mind, Iowa is actually recruiting at a really decent level right now for basketball.
They just got a four-star.
They got Joshua Lewis. He's the second highest rated guy in the Fran era.
Yeah.
Like, he's a top 70 prospect. He's a really good player. Fits Iowa's system extremely well on both ends of the floor. Willing defender. They have the Isaiah Johnson Argue from Miami, who's going to be eligible immediately next year. Like, he's recruiting pretty decent right now. That's kind of the flip side of it, though, too. But I also am of the belief that you can't keep – like, I'm saying from a Beth perspective, not saying one thing should happen. But if you're an athletic director and you analyze the situation and you decide to keep a coach or something based off recruiting, I think that's stupid. I think it's extremely short-sighted, especially with the transfer portal nowadays and how you can rebuild in a year.
Sure.
And that's why coaches aren't going to get more time. So, but if we talk about Fran stepping away, again, from what I understand, I think Fran still wants to coach. I think he still loves coaching. But at the same time, if you're talking about when it makes sense for everybody involved, again, I'm not putting out my opinion on this yet. The tea leaves add up to potentially this year being the year.
Sure.
Youngest son goes to Butler. Middle son's done with basketball because Patrick has no other eligibility. Connor's still coaching at Butler. Maybe Fran wants to go support and watch his son play basketball instead of like coaching his sons or like watching, right?
It certainly wouldn't be surprising. You know, you're in your, what is he, 60s something?
He's coached for a long time. I want to say.
Financially, he's set up forever. He wants to go enjoy his kids.
The other side of it too is, and this is the larger picture when it comes to Iowa men's basketball, because again, certain criticisms of Fran, I understand. I think they're extreme. I think they're valid. People have a right to be upset or apathetic, right? But there are far more issues than the coaching staff. Iowa resource-wise is not good. It's in a difficult recruiting area for basketball, especially men's basketball, especially. The locker rooms aren't good. Like, there's a lot of extra little stuff when you compare them to the rest of the Big Ten, Tyler.
Yeah.
Iowa's falling short in. There are certain big picture administrative things that Beth will have to take on, whether Fran returns to Iowa or not.
Yeah, it's
because there are larger issues at hand. NIL. I mean, Iowa's probably a bottom four program right now in NIL in the Big Ten for basketball.
I was just going to say, there's an issue of where, like, you got a school like Iowa, the rev share is going to help.
Yes.
But when Caitlin comes in and does her thing, and now we care about Iowa women's basketball, like, I mean, if you're asking me, I'm giving just as much or more to the women right now. Like, you gotta feed the golden goose, brother. It's gonna be a hot
issue for some people, but I also I'm kind of leaning toward the same boat as you. If you have a chance to elevate yourself as a blue blood of a sport, which by the way is probably the fastest surging sport in college athletics.
Yep.
I think you get out ahead of the curve, and I'll tell you, Beth would be the one to probably push that envelope a little bit. She seems like that
type. Feed the golden goose, David. Feed the golden goose. And that's Iowa basketball. There's no doubt. Like, if you're looking at this from a macro perspective, you have very, very few chances to establish yourself as a quote unquote blue blood.
Yeah.
That's a very strong term. Iowa men's basketball, it's a stat. Like, there's
establishment. Yeah, long way to go.
Kansas, North Carolina, Duke. Like,
UConn.
We're not breaking through there. You could give us $100 million, and I don't think we break through there. Women's basketball on the rise. Not very many programs where you're like, hey, that's the standard. And Iowa could become one of those if they get through this year, you give them money, they get a couple five stars, and for the next decade, we're a Sweet 16 team every single season. That's where you feed the money.
Here's what I'll say, too, about the men's program, and this is kind of what I've hung my hat on for the past – few weeks, probably at least since that Minnesota loss, maybe a little bit before that, right? An angry fan base is far superior to an apathetic fan base, because anger implies emotion and care and love mm-hmm. for something.
Yeah.
Apathetic is what it is.
Yeah.
We're not emotionally invested at this point. And I think that's when the scariest thing is going to come at the end of this season, whether it be Fran having to make a decision, whether it's Beth having to make a decision, or maybe Iowa rips off 8 straight and we aren't having this conversation. But even if that happens, Fran has been in Iowa so long, and again, I'm not my opinion. I'm just speaking in from the fan base perspective and giving context.
Yep.
I think it's going to be incredibly difficult, regardless of what Fran does, because he's been here for so long, to get an apathetic fan base to fully buy in again.
Yeah, it will be.
Whether, I mean, and again, I particularly don't think it's all Fran's fault. I think there are a lot of other issues at hand.
It's never a single fault, no.
Like, for again, I say this for anybody. If you think all the issues are going to be solved by Fran leaving Iowa, I got news for you. It's that's just not the case. Now, certain things might improve. Certain things might regress, right? But that just comes with the nature of making a significant change.
Yeah.
But again, it's January 29th. I want to have this conversation in 6-7 weeks because I want to see how everything kind of shakes out. But again, that schedule is going to be very difficult. And I also want to see if Iowa doesn't make postseason basketball. Like, I'll say it. What happens in the portal?
Yeah, I mean, let me just pull up my calendar here and schedule you in for 6 or 7 weeks from now. We can have that conversation. No, that's really good. That's 30 minutes worth of basketball talk, and that's actually exactly how I wanted today's podcast to go. I wanted the
first. No, there you go. Okay, I was going to apologize. I thought we talked.
No. Long, I'm good with it. No, you're like, I know we got football to talk about now. Like, I wanted to get a little update on basketball and.
Sure.
Who knows? Probably overinflating how much I think people actually care about that conversation, but. I think it was a good conversation. We'll flip to football now. Basketball is always fun. It'll continue to go through this spring. We'll see what happens, both programs. Since we last talked, in fact, the last time we talked, it was all but like – it wasn't official yet, but I think the next day, Hank Brown committed.
Yep.
Officially.
Man, we it's been that long. Holy moly.
Yeah,
I didn't think it was that long.
Yeah, we basically like talked like, hey, he's pretty much in, but they're going to go after somebody else, and they got their somebody else. In fact, they had 5 transfer portal pickups this season. I don't think, you know, the 2 linemen aren't really getting a whole lot of play. The receiver got a little bit of buzz, but obviously the biggest stuff was Mark Gronowski, 2-time national champion, bum shoulder. But he's won like 500 games at the FCS level, becomes a Hawkeye. That's a huge pickup.
Stud. This is the type of guy that Iowa needed. Kudos, Kirk Ferentz. Kudos, Tim Lester. They got the guy. This is the guy you overpay for. And again, I don't think Iowa overpaid because I know other schools offered him more. Okay.
Really?
But yeah.
I'm not gonna like make you divulge, but Miami was sort of interested. Wisconsin was sort of interested. His coaching staff went to Washington State. He had a lot of options.
Miami, from what I understand, would have offered over $2.2 million
if he wasn't hurt.
But they wanted to check out. They were a little bit scared of his shoulder. But again, I wrote this from the beginning, right when he entered the portal. Contrary to what anybody says, I'm gonna stick my chest out and say what I've always said. There was no shot he was going anywhere else but Iowa or the NFL. He was not going to Wazoo. He was not going to Miami. He was not going to Tech.
What kind of NFL grade did he have? Like, what? Like, if he decided to pursue that route, where was he going to go?
Fifth or sixth round.
Day 3? Yeah.
Yeah, day 3. But, again, that's where Iowa can thrive in the NIL space. I mean, you can get a guy like that and convince him to come back for another year. And, again, for Gronowski, it made perfect sense. One, if you're the quarterback who elevates Iowa's passing offense, there's your grade. It's going up.
Well,
skyrocketing.
I tweeted this when he committed or something, and I think some people misunderstood it. By no means do I think Mark Gronowski will be like – I suppose he could be. Going to be hard in 1 year. I don't think he ends up being a top 10 Hawkeye football player of all time.
No.
I do think that because of where the program is right now – go back to that apathy thing with the offense and like, hey, we're really trying to dig this thing out of a massive hole that we should have never been in the first place. I think he could be one of the most influential, important Hawkeyes of all time because of the position he plays and the time at which he steps into the program. Man, if you're the guy to dig them out of hell, bro, like,
I don't think they land Sam Phillips without Mark Gronowski. Well, I think he ends up going somewhere else too. I mean, like, but that's what I'm saying. It's one of those things, Tyler. Like, Gronowski's a three-level thrower, and for people who are upset about his shoulder and worried about – stop. The Cade McNamara injury versus Mark Gronowski injury, they're so far apart, it's stupid to compare. Like, I'll talk my shit a little bit. It makes zero sense on every single level.
However, though, you know, from the outside, you can understand a little bit of, like, weariness.
Yes.
Of, God, yes. Another guy who's got another certain – like, is this going to happen to us again? Because we do all feel burnt right now.
Yes. No, and that part of it, I mean, is fair. But I'm saying, like, the difference between the injuries, the context of the injuries, and the severity of the injuries are so far different. Sure. And that's what I'm going. But as far as, like, Iowa fans being a little bit nervous because they have an injured quarterback, yes. I'm not going to argue against it. You're right to feel that way. No question. But two things are important. One, Cade McNamara's leg was shredded. Like, let's call it what it was. He had a huge rehab to do before he even got to campus, and obviously everything happened during his first year. We saw all that. Gronowski played with his bad shoulder all year, and guess what? Still pretty damn good.
Yeah, it was great.
Still really good. So that's kind of where I'm going with that is now he's going to be healthy. Now he's going to be ready to go. And on top of that, he ran a similar system at South Dakota State.
Yeah.
Right. He ran a similar style offense. So this is not a Cade McNamara situation where he has to go in, learn a new system, et cetera. And on top of that, too, Gronowski's legs are fine. He can go through progressions. He can go through the footwork. He won't be throwing a football.
Yeah. I like that. If you're going to get nitpicky about it, I like that the injury was upper body and it wasn't major.
Yes.
Versus lower body, because what we're looking for on the Iowa court, like, yeah, you got to throw the ball, but like, yo, we're not throwing it 50 times and a game, and you're not throwing it downfield. Like, we're not just taking shots. We're like, we would be concerned about like someone who, with a shoulder injury, who we need to come in and throw 20 bombs a game, right? He just has to be serviceable. Like, Stratton or Sullivan showed flashes of, like, just be serviceable. But with your legs, and that's what we love about Brendan Sullivan, hey, extend the play. Like, be an athlete. And those seem to be fine, although he did have an ACL earlier in his career. But lower body-wise, he seemed to be sturdy for the last 3 years at South Dakota State.
Remember, his first game post-ACL was that 7-3 game at Iowa.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know some people are worried about that as far as what he can do at the FBS level. I would caution you again not to buy into that because, number one, I think he just got cleared like a couple weeks before that. Number two, he only played 1 year. Number three, do you remember that fucking defense he had to go against?
Yeah, he went against the third best defense in the country, potentially in the argument for one of Iowa's best defenses all time.
Yes. So, again, I think Gronowski is a tremendous pickup. He's a three-level thrower. I think he's going to have to protect himself a little bit better running the football than he did at the FCS level. He's a big guy, but he wasn't afraid to run over some people at the FCS level.
Sure.
You're not doing that against, you know, Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon. Just protect yourself. And that was the big thing with Brendan Sullivan, too. Loved him. Yeah. Brendan Sullivan extended his plays, but the kid wanted it so bad. He didn't protect himself.
He just gets crunched in that UCLA game, and it opens up a whole new world to him. I think the important stuff for Hawkeye fans, as a former guy, the quarterback stuff is proven, right? I think what's exciting about Gronowski is his pedigree. The fact that he was a leader on multiple national championship teams. I don't care if you're at the D3 level. That sort of leadership and intangible qualities – those are huge. And then, of course, everything he brings to the table physically. So I'm very excited about him. What can you tell us about Sam Phillips? And then further than that, we got this guy, Bryce Hawthorne, Jonah Pace. Are those guys starters? Are those guys coming into play?
I think they'll be rotational players. Iowa really needed a couple of defensive tackles in the rotation. I mean, you lose Y.A. Black, who I don't know if you saw his measurables the other day, Tyler.
I don't know if you saw the clip of him dominating some offensive linemen.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get paid.
He's about 6'6", 340 he measured out at. I mean, he is a freaking tank, dude. I wish I could remember how big his arms measured out at. But, I mean, those two guys, defensive tackles, I think they're going to be really, really solid. I don't think any of them are particularly stars right away. I think Hawthorne is a very underrated pickup. That he's gonna be a dude in about a year or two. I really, really believe that. I think he'll be very serviceable. from year one, but Sam Phillips was a big get. I mean, he wants to be a big time playmaking guy. I don't know if Iowa gets him if they don't land Gronowski. And he even told Sean Bock, he said, yeah, getting Gronowski helps. Because, you know, he has scheduled visit USC, didn't end up making that trip, went to visit Vontech, went to Vontech, did a couple of things like that. But the biggest stat to me, which is so important, 78 targets last year, zero drops.
That's like Larry Fitzgerald.
Zero drops. That's what Iowa needs. They need consistency, guys that can go over the middle, only about 5'10", but his physicality and his willingness to be an athlete and go up and get those 50-50 balls. He wants to stretch the field. He's a possession receiver. He can throw him in the slot, throw him as an undersized outside guy. Versatility, and more importantly, Tyler, proven production. I mean, this wide receiver room is still in the process of being revamped. I actually think John Budmeyer's done a pretty decent job thus far. I know he's been – you know, I was critical of the hire initially. I think a lot of people were, and quite frankly, for good reason. I think there was a little bit of reason to be nervous about it. But they bring in Terrence Smith, the four-star freshman, who I think could potentially shake some things up. Jarriott Bowie had a couple of nice catches last year. I'm really excited about Jacob Gill and Sam Phillips together. I just think those two are very similar, but also very different at the same time. Those can be Gronowski's kind of go-to weapons. So very excited about Phillips. I'm curious where he kind of breaks through as far as the rotation. But yeah, I think Iowa did a nice job in the portal. I would have liked them to land a cornerback. Maybe they go after one in the second cycle. Remember, the second cycle is only open for 10 days. I believe it's April 16th to April 25th. And Iowa's usually still in spring practice. So that's kind of a difficult time frame.
Yeah.
Because usually their spring game's around the 22nd. 18th to the 22nd, typically.
Interesting. So, yeah, it does feel like they addressed, you know, it was huge to get Dunker and Jones back on the line.
And yes.
I think that not only just for Gronowski, but just like the line in general. So, like, we kind of talked about that the last time you were on, we didn't actually have to address that as much as we maybe in the beginning of the season initially thought we would. It does seem like the cornerback position, especially with, it's going to be a Cooper Bowl, by the way. And there's a reason that the Eagles got better when they put him in, and it's because he affects football games. And I think maybe an underrated talking point is how much we just miss a generational player.
We knew he was so good, but – man, just when you watched last year, you really see, damn, he really did change everything.
Yeah, we really did miss him. You know, like, he had that effect that Desmond had after he had a crazy year.
Nobody threw him the ball this senior. He only had like two.
Yeah, he had two picks, and it's like, well, yeah, because they completely decided to just not throw that way. and Cooper had that same effect, and I think
who
underestimated
on the opposite side of Desmond. Yes, I was thinking, yeah, it was maybe. God bless those guys, those corners who had, like, shutdown corners because, God, they got targeted. They probably were playing decent defense half the time, but
yeah,
teams were only looking over there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Maben was on the other side for Desmond's final year. And
yeah,
and Maben, right. I mean, that Maben floated right around in the league for a while. He was on teams for 4 or 5 years, I think, practice squad, stuff like that. So, hell of an athlete. We'll see. It's again one of those things with Phil and the defense where you're like, they're going to find somebody. Somebody's going to reload. Like,
I really, really want to see Cam Buffington, dude. Like,
I mean, just everywhere. Like,
I love their linebacker class. I love the linebackers they have in that room. I think they're going to take a little bit of time to adjust, but you know, Seth Wallace will get those guys right. And that freshman class they brought in last year, linebacker.
They've got dudes. They got dudes. Like, the best athletes of Iowa always end up in the Iowa linebacker room. And it's just like, oh, God, it's unbelievable. and outside of Iowa. But, if they can figure it out in the secondary and just shore some things up, get a little bit better. I mean, X is back, right? Again, one more year.
X was back. He had to come back. Like, I
had to.
I think he knows it's kind of a make or break. It's a make or break year for him because I think he has all the athleticism in the world. I think he's a good kid. I think he's a smart kid. he has to piece it together. And I think he thinks through things too much. I think he has to trust his preparation. Yeah. I don't think he's done a good job of that.
Sure. Cool. Well, there's your update.
Gronowski.
I thought about calling this like the Ike report or something like that. No, it's good. It's good. We haven't talked in a while. A lot of things happening. I talked with, a couple of those guys that we've had on so far off the record, off camera afterwards. Yeah. I was kind of asking them some questions about how it's been talked about, like the revenue sharing and how much NIL is really affecting stuff. And, they kind of looked at me like, dude, it's different now. Like guys are getting paid.
The reality with what needs to happen with college athletics, there's two things that need to happen. One, there has to be a commissioner of college football.
Yeah.
They're missing just that number one power structure person. You can go in there, make just the rule of law, make things consistent.
We're trying to get G-Bone to campaign for that. Like
why wouldn't he?
G-Bone, commissioner of college football. He would be great.
Yeah. Big fan. Big fan. He's got my, I'll endorse him.
Yeah.
G-Bone, 2026.
Yeah. For college football, CFB commissioner.
Second thing is, I know people are going to disagree with me on this. They need a salary cap. There has to be a salary cap.
Yeah, it's got
to
be.
And there has to be some reward for players staying at the same school.
Yeah, and I think.
Because it's not sustainable to have players go to three or four different schools. Like, there are guys who have gone to just as many schools in more schools than Drew Ott had years eligibility.
I know.
It's ridiculous.
I think so they get the $22 million, whatever, and it looks like most football schools that care are going to spend like $14-15 million of that on football. Then you're looking at okay. And then outside of that, whatever you got from NIL structure, like you can give those guys NIL too. And I think a lot of those teams are like, I don't know the numbers, but what it feels like is teams are working with like $8-10 million a year in NIL money, like the best, right? Like, I mean, you hear about Ohio State's got 20, Oregon's got 20, like some of them have upwards of 20, but like everybody else on that next competitive tier is somewhere around like 6 to 7 to 12, like somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at total, like you're starting to get upwards of like, okay, we're at 20, we're at 25 million. I think it's got to be like $20 or $25 million is the cap or something like for the year.
And now, I said this on last podcast too. God bless Tyler Barnes, because I don't know how he does
my goodness.
He does right now. Seriously, I know people can be critical of recruiting and stuff, but I guarantee you this dude's has worked 18, 19 hours a day over the past 6 weeks between the portal, recruiting, and everything else. I don't know how he has about 8 of these a day, I bet.
Oh, yeah. He's always walking around with a coffee. I think I want to have him on because he could talk about so much and give insight to this, but
he's a good interview too.
Yeah. He's awesome. I think you got to cap it at like 20 or somewhere around $20 million, maybe a little more
just for some form of consistency. Like that's the other part of it. Like I'm not saying from a competitive standpoint, or like, some schools have competitive advantage, cause we all know how this works. I mean, shit, look at the Dodgers
and the money has to be the same. You have to have, You can't let a blue blood who has all of the tradition and recruiting hotbed and all of that already as an advantage also have double the money to pay the guys. Like it's just, that's not fair.
That's what I'm saying. Yep.
What blows my mind is when you do the math on that, there's 105 guys on a roster now starting in August. you divide 20 million by 100, and that's like 200 grand average per guy per year, and I'm quickly starting to fall into a depression about how I was 10 years early. I was just 10 years too early, which I am going to get a payout on this compensation deal, this court case that went through supposedly, but it's not going to be nearly what I could have made in the rev share era, even as a long snapper, because I asked Luke Elkin about it.
Well, let me throw another back at you. What about Caitlin Clark at Iowa?
That's the thing, is like Caitlin. Yeah.
She could have gotten paid. And the other part of it too is,
well, remember, but here's the problem. I don't feel bad for Caitlin at all.
I'm just saying, but like, think of how much unearned money was there, because like she could have signed to Nike a lot earlier. She could have done certain things. And the other side of it too is her freshman year, she was playing in front of cardboard cutouts and the TV deal is bad. Like, and then pushed it through her sophomore year. But like, she still could have made some good money her first year just because of how her profile elevated. So again, two totally different situations, but it's going to be really, really interesting. But I'll tell you what, that's what the NCAA gets for sitting on their hands and sitting on their ass for the last 100 years and putting billions of dollars into a court case that they were never going to win.
Yeah. I saw something like Caitlin made the city of Indianapolis, like something like $60 or $80 million or something like that in her first year there. So it's just like, okay, well,
she was responsible for 26% of the overall revenue in the WNBA.
In the entire league. Wild. Fucking wild, dude. All right. We've talked too long. I've used too much of David's time. We'll have plenty of this stuff to talk about on a monthly basis, because that's sort of the frequency at which I want to bring him on a little women's basketball. I already know the clickbait title I'm about to use for this episode. A little men's basketball. Oh, it's a Iowa position for 2 5-stars? ?
Yeah, nice. Good.
They're going to take football or a football podcast. Psych. Women's basketball, baby. We're also a women's basketball brand. No, I hope everybody enjoyed the conversation. A little more on Mark Gronowski, the other transfers, all the good stuff. We appreciate David as always. This is going up tomorrow. And then if all goes to plan, we're going to record with Tyler Ellsbury tonight, and that'll go up on Monday. So,
hell yeah.
So excited for that one. Appreciate everybody for being here, listening, and staying with us in 2025 as we trudge through the year. We'll talk next time. Until then. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.